Mike Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
It's Friday. Happy Friday. A couple weeks from now, we are going to be at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey for our next live show. So join us for that on Friday, October 11th. Friday, October 11th. There was a friend of ours. I'm going to play this clip a little bit later in the show, but remember yesterday I said to you I got distracted during the show because Fox News was texting me. They were asking me for somebody who could come on the show who was a Democrat and is Jewish and has decided to vote for Donald Trump. And so I texted my buddy Jeff Bartos, and it turns out we both sent to Dana Perino's producer the same person. And he was on America's Newsroom this morning. And so we're going to grab some audio of that for you. But it was really nice to see that at least our efforts to get them somebody. And it's funny, too, because it was frantic during the show. But Steve Rosenberg wound up being the contact. And I'm texting them and they're texting me. It's multiple producers and bookers. And it's funny how it works behind the scenes. But speaking of Dana Perino, my friend, I will be on her podcast on Monday, the Perino on Politics, it's called, Perino on Politics. I will be her guest on her podcast on Monday. We're going to talk about the swing states, and we'll talk about Pennsylvania, obviously. So when that airs, I will make sure you know about it, and it's on video, too. So she does a video podcast, and it's also a audio thing as well. So that'll be Monday. So I'm looking forward to that. She is a star. She is a star, no doubt about it. All right. The Secret Service. I want to still cover the Secret Service director thing. I don't want to give up on that. We will get into the Kamala Harris stuff because I want to break that down for you from the perspective of somebody who's worked on campaigns and has worked and literally done media training for candidates. Let me just tell you a story real quick. So my friend Ken Kersen, who you've heard on the show before, Ken is a political genius. He really is one of the smartest guys I know. And years ago, when I was in New Jersey politics full time, that was before I got into talk radio, he would call me up and he'd say, I've got this candidate running for U.S. Senate, or I've got this candidate running for Congress. Can you do media training with them? And I would. I would go in. That's ultimately how I got hooked up with Donald Trump back in 2015, because Ken and Jared Kushner were roommates. So they're close friends. And then Ken called me up and said, hey, can you do a little debate prep with somebody? And I said, who? Well, first he asked me, he said, are you helping anybody in the 2016 cycle? And I said, no, I'm not. He said, would you like to help somebody? I said, well, who? And he said, well, it's Trump, obviously, you know. But anyway, so he called me up and I would go and I would do media training. And the way you do media training with candidates, not Trump. Trump doesn't do anything conventional. So I'm not speaking about anything with him. But with lesser candidates, way lesser candidates, you would do mock interviews with them. And the whole key to that is you ask them questions and you see how they respond. You have a camera there, you film it, and then you watch the answers together and you say, okay, how does this sound? How do you think you came across here? And you go over the fundamentals, body language, eye contact, all those things. You work on all that, but ultimately you want to work on the substance of the answers to the question. There were two particular candidates in the course of my media training over the years, and I've done this with CEOs and I've done this with authors and not just politicians, but there were two candidates that I worked with, and both of those candidates were absolutely incapable of answering a question. It was just amazing. They just couldn't. And so what we would do, the strategy around that is, okay, here's the answer. Let's practice it. And you literally do that like you're practicing, and you wind up having actors go out and read rehearsed lines. The problem with that, though, is that people can see through it if they're not good at it. Neither candidate won. I've worked with winning candidates. I've worked with losing candidates. Everybody who's ever been a political consultant in their life has worked with both winning and losing candidates. There's no one who has 100% record on winning. There are people that have 100% record on losing, but, you know, and the media trainer doesn't run the campaign. We're just brought in, you know, hired help, hired gun, and, you know, go back. But listening to Kamala Harris on Oprah last night, it occurred to me she is getting media trained badly, poorly, and she's doing what media trainers should never do, which is to give them scripted answers that they have to memorize and rehearse. See, that's what you're supposed to do. I wouldn't do that with my clients because I know that it comes across robotic and it comes across insincere. So there were other strategies that I would employ to get them to be able to open up and talk about policies and issues. Whoever is doing Kamala Harris's media training is not good. They're not a good media trainer because they are giving her scripted, pre-rehearsed answers. And then she has to go and recite them like an actress in a play. And she's not good at doing that. Actually, you know, while I'm on this, let's just jump into this. I'll come back to the Secret Service because you know how my mind works. This one, number two, and Matt, I'm going to stop and start this a couple times here. But voters ask Kamala, what's your plan to lower the cost of living? OK, what's your plan to lower the cost of living? I'm going to give you a little insight into how media training works with a presidential candidate or any candidate for that matter. Not Trump. Again, Trump doesn't do this and we never did. And he doesn't need it. And he never did. But there are candidates who desperately do need it. And she's one of them. All right. So, you know, you probably have heard this clip by now. She gets asked the question, what's your plan to lower the cost of living? OK, go ahead. Cut to.
We really would love to know what your plan is to help lower the cost of living.
Yeah. First of all, thank you both for being here. And yours is a story I hear around the country as I travel. And in terms of.
Stop it right there. Did they tell her a story or did they just ask her a question? They asked her a question. That's it. Now, you see, we'd really like to know what you're going to do with cost of living. Oh, yours is a story that I hear as I travel around the country, trying to empathize with people. Yours is a story that I hear as I travel around the country. Now, it sounds to me like she got the Franzia box of wine and she got the dark ruby red one. You know, with those, you know, Matt, if you ever do a box of wine, and I'm sure you do because you're definitely a cheap. What's the word for a bastard? So you're going to buy a box of wine. You ever show up to my house with a box of wine, by the way, you're not getting fat. I'm not going to feed you.
What's wrong with the box?
It's not good.
Yeah, but there's a lot of wine in there.
Yeah, but it's not quantity. You want quality wine.
I don't know. If you're drinking, you kind of want quantity as well. The box gives you that quantity, Rich.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the box is quality.
I'll be honest. I figured as a Harvard guy, he would be really snobby about wine. That surprised me.
If I'm being honest, I've had like two glasses of wine in my entire
life. He only drinks Coca-Cola, Justin. That's the problem. He only drinks Coca-Cola. We'll be out to a nice restaurant, like at the RNC, a nice restaurant, you know, steaks and everything, like the cheese curds. And he gets Coca-Cola.
Oh, God.
Embarrassing.
One glass of wine that I had was actually at a wedding. It was from a $10,000 bottle. Mm. Someone was foolish enough to offer me a glass of it. Disgusting. I hated it.
Yeah.
I took a few sips and then I passed it off to somebody else.
Yeah, that's a disgrace right there. As a wine lover, I'm offended by that.
I felt compelled. Like, how many times is someone going to offer me a glass from a $10,000 bottle? No one is that foolish, generally speaking, but they didn't know me that well.
No, you got to do that. You got to definitely do that. All right, so back to Kamala Harris's word salad, right? So she's trying to empathize and be empathetic with people by saying, yours is a story I hear as I travel around the country. This is, again, the media trainers telling her, you need to be relatable. You need to feel people's pain. She's trying to be Bill Clinton. Because I'll tell you what, Bill Clinton, that guy was good, man. That guy, oh, was he good. He could fake it like nobody else. He'd go out there and, you know, bite that lower lip and do that thing with his hand and go, I feel your pain, you know, and he was good, right? And he was running against George H.W. Bush, who didn't know what a gallon of milk cost because he's the president and he doesn't do shopping. But they made that a whole thing. And he checked his watch during a debate, which was disastrous for him to do. But Clinton's out there like, I feel your pain, you know, and he was good. He'd make people believe it. He'd make people believe that he could walk a mile in their shoes. Oh, man, empathy. That's it. But she can't say, I feel your pain. That's already been taken. So, and Clinton's the biggest BS artist ever. If there was a BS artist Hall of Fame, Bill Clinton's face would be on it. It'd be like, you know, they should name it after him. Like the William Jefferson Clinton Hall of Fame, BS Hall of Fame. And put his face in there. And as soon as you walk in, there's a statue of him biting his lower lip and doing that thing he used to do with his hand with it. I feel your pain. And they should have that quote. Like, I feel your pain. But at the same time, as BS as it is, it's good. It's good. And Carville knew what he was doing. And so did the unbiased, at the time, George Stephanopoulos. I'm getting confused. Two different people. There was another guy on the campaign named George Stephanopoulos. He was a young, up-and-coming Democrat operative. smart guy, little guy. They called him Twinkle Toes back then. But he was a little guy. Bob Grant used to call him that. And he would help out with James Carville. So the two of them would go out there, and they'd have Bill Clinton going out there and saying, I feel your pain. Do you know what happened to that George Stephanopoulos, by the way? You know what happened to him? He drank himself to death on a box of wine. True story. No joke. No relation to the unbiased journalist George Stephanopoulos on ABC News. That guy's an unbiased journalist. No relation to the George Stephanopoulos that worked on the Clinton campaign. That guy overdosed on a box of Chablis, Franzia Chablis, just went nuts. Tapped a vein with it. That's how he went out. Tragic. Very sad. Very, very tragic. So to make her sound empathetic, she goes, I hear these stories as I travel around the country. Yours is so similar to the stories and blah, blah, blah. So now you know what they're trying to do. Make her sound empathetic. All right, keep going.
In terms of both rightly having the right to have aspirations and dreams.
Stop it right there. I don't know what the hell that means. To rightly, the right to rightly have. I don't, this word salad, I can't figure this out, but I'll tell you what's happening right now. They've given her a scripted answer, and she's having trouble remembering her lines. Now, if this was a play, you would just look at, you go, line, and they'd tell you the line. But it's not a play, it's the Oprah Winfrey interview, so nobody can save her, so she's trying to remember what it is. She's in that moment where she's trying to remember it. It's like you ever go to a party and you can't think of somebody's name, you just can't place it, but you know it, it's on the tip of your tongue, and you're like, is it John? Do I go with John? What if it's not John? And you're trying to buy some time, and you're hoping somebody else will come along and maybe go, hey, how are you? And the guy will go, I'm Bob. And you go, Bob, damn it, I knew it was Bob. Shoot. But that's what she's doing. So she's trying to buy time so she can remember her pre-scripted, rehearsed answer on the economy, which, by the way, is not a very good answer. But that's what this is. But I have no idea what that means. The right to rightly have the... Back it up like a few seconds there so we can hear that word salad mumbo jumbo. And at this point now, the word salad's been elevated to include chickpeas and radishes and those little pickle thingies that should never be on a salad either. All these things now, all the accoutrements. Go ahead.
In terms of both rightly having the right to have aspirations and dreams.
What does that, what is that? To rightly have the right to have the right to, huh? Is that even English? Is that even, if you put that into Google Translate, can you translate that into English? Is that old English? Is that Pig Latin? Is that Pig Latin? That's what I want to know. I mean, it's so bad. Yeah, that's right. She sounds like a kid giving a book report on a book they haven't read. Moby Dick is about a whale who is in the ocean and people are on a boat and the whale gulp is in the ocean and they're on the boat and the whale is ocean because whales like oceans and oceans like whales. And the whale has a right to rightly swim in the ocean. And the Moby Dick guys, I didn't read the book. I'm sorry. I didn't read the book. Yeah, awkward. Again, can you back it up one more time? Because I'm trying to make sense of this, but I'm telling you what's happening now. So this is the brain trying to remember, trying to dance as she tries to remember the pre-scripted rehearsed answers that she's about to give. Go ahead.
In terms of both rightly having the right to have aspirations and dreams.
Rightly having the right to have
ambitions for your family.
And ambitions.
And working hard and finding that the American dream is, for this generation and so many recently, far more elusive than it's been. And we need to deal with that. And there are a number of ways. One is bringing down...
Stop. Okay, so there you go. It takes her 30 seconds of rambling to get to how she's going to deal with the economy. And I'm telling you the reason why. Two reasons. Number one is because they're trying to make this phony person, she does not care about you, she doesn't care about anybody. They're trying to make this phony elitist sound like she has empathy for what people are dealing with and struggling with. When for 3.5 years she's been there and didn't give a flying you know what about the struggles of everyday Americans because they did nothing to help you. That's number one. So they're trying to fake empathy, and you can't fake empathy. That's one of those things in life. You can't fake empathy. You can fake sympathy, but not empathy, and there's a difference. So sympathy is when you feel sorry for somebody. Empathy is when you literally can feel what they're feeling. And certain people are very good at that. They have good, they're high emotional IQ, or EQ as it's called, and they can feel that. And you can't fake it. It's either you have it or you don't have it. And that's it. What do you got for me, Justin? You got a clip for me?
Yeah, listening to her stumble through this, it reminded me of this clip that was popular a couple of years ago. This is from like an HBO show where they're asking this kid about like describing some dreams that he had, and this was his response.
Have you ever had a dream that you could do him to do you so much you could do anything?
But that's a child. Well done. Well done, Justin. Excellent. Excellent contribution. Kid's only been here a week. He's already contributing audio.
It's pretty
good. Wow. Excellent. You've done more in 1 week than Matt DeSantis has done in 2 years, just so you know.
No way. That's like at least 6 months worth of effort from me.
Unbelievable. Well done. Giving us content already, Matt. Look at that. Giving us content already. The kid's been with us, not even for a full week, because he had to do Walter Sterling's show for a couple days. So.
Yeah. He's with us moving forward, though.
Good. Happy to have you, Justin.
Happy to be here.
That's right. Absolutely. We'll go over some ground rules on Monday. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. The only army has to approve you. You know, it's not just, you can't just be the associate producer of the program. You don't just walk into this. You got to, you know, there's a little bit of a ritual we got to go through. So,
like hazing, basically.
Yeah, you call it hazing. Some people call it unnecessary humiliation. Whatever you want to use is your.
I think that's the definition of hazing, actually.
You know, however you want to use, whatever word choice. I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but. But that's it. I mean, this is what we're dealing with this candidate. She is terrible. It's so bad trying to remember what her handlers told her to say. And it's really, really bad. And the other thing, too, is she's such a liar. Do you remember that time that she said, just because you're a legal gun owner, that doesn't mean it's going to stop us from going into your home? Do you have that clip, Matt? Can you find that?
Yeah,
that was from yesterday's show.
Hang on 1 second.
She said, just because you're a legal gun owner, it's not going to stop us from going into your home and making sure that gun is right or safe or something like that. Last time I checked, the government just can't come into your home. They need a warrant to do so. And just owning a gun does not give them probable cause of a crime. You have a right, a constitutional right, to own a firearm. So the mere presence or ownership of a gun is not in and of itself probable cause to obtain a warrant. How could it be? How could it be? You go to a judge. Yeah, Your Honor, I need a search warrant. Why? We think the guy has a gun. Okay, well, you think he's committing a crime? No, he just has a gun. Okay, well, do you think it's illegal? No, it's legal. Well, then why would I give you a search warrant? Well, we need to make sure the gun is properly stored and the gun is clean. Well, get the hell out of my courtroom. But I don't think these people would use warrants. I don't think they would. That's the scary part about it. I don't think they'd even go through the courts. This is what she said. Take a listen.
Responsible behaviors among everybody in the community. And just because you legally possess a gun in the sanctity of your locked home doesn't mean that we're not going to walk into that home and check to see if you're being responsible and safe in the way you conduct your affairs.
Have you heard from...
In your locked home, just because you own a legal gun in your locked home isn't going to stop us from coming into your home and check to make sure that gun is okay. Are you kidding me? First of all, there's no way that passes constitutional muster. So you're not dealing with the courts. You're doing some sort of very authoritarian, tyrannical tactics right there. And you need a list, you need a registry, and you got to knock on doors and go, hi, how you doing? We're at the ATF. We're here to inspect your firearms to make sure they're being properly stored and they're safe and whatever else other rambling nonsense she said. That, whoa, that's not what they do in the United States of America. You do not, possession of a weapon, a legally owned firearm, does not give the government probable cause to enter your home. under any circumstances, unless you are committing a crime or they think you're going to commit a crime, or there's probable cause to believe you're going to use that gun in the commission of a crime, or you're doing another thing that is a commission of a crime. But just the mere ownership of that does not justify a warrant. But these people don't care. They don't care about the Constitution or the process of that. Just because you have a legally owned firearm in your home, locked up, in your locked home, that's not going to stop us from coming in. But we're supposed to believe, and Oprah's so full of crap, you know, happened debate when Kamala Harris said both she and Tim Walz are gun owners. She's full of crap. Oprah acts last night like she didn't know. I guess she didn't watch the debate. She didn't know Kamala Harris has a gun. Because here's what Kamala Harris said last night about guns. Don't believe her on this, by the way. The woman who wants to go and inspect your guns. Cut number three.
And these are just common sense. These are just common
sense. I thought it was so powerful at the convention when you said you have guns. No, at the debate. At the debate.
I'm a gun owner. Tim Walz is a gun.
I did not know that.
If somebody breaks in my house, they're getting shot.
Yes, yes. I hear that. I hear that.
Probably should not have said that. But my staff will deal with that later. Yeah.
See, it's all rehearsed and pre-scripted. I probably shouldn't have said that. No, no, no. She was told to say that. Her handler said, just so you got your bona fides, we're going to make sure you say that you know how to use a gun, too. All right? And then they laugh and they giggle and, oh, I shouldn't have said that. And, oh, they'll clean it up and ha, ha, ha. Like, oh, look at me. I'm all unscripted. I'm hanging with Oprah. I'm just having a good time here. And, ooh. And Oprah didn't know she was a gun owner. And, well, I had no idea when I heard that at that debate. And Kamala Harris wanted mandatory buybacks. You know what mandatory means? It means you don't have a choice. So a buyback program is the government confiscates your, if it's mandatory, that means it's confiscation. You know how they say with words that mean other words and they play little games like that where the word means something that it doesn't mean? Okay, so a buyback, if it's voluntary, means here's my iPhone. I'm going to give it to the Apple store. I'm going to buy the new iPhone and they're going to give me a couple $100 for this. That's a buyback. If it's a mandatory buyback and it's the government, it's called confiscation. They're taking my property from me and they're going to give me, because they have to under the Constitution, they're going to give me money in exchange for that property. However, that compensation for that money, for that property that's been taken, no, that's usually very rarely does it really match up. But the government has a right to do that. Confiscate property, eminent domain. They have those things. And there are people who believe that also includes other things, too. That means the government could confiscate your gas-powered car in the name of climate change. Mandatory buyback. They'll give you money for it, but it's going to be mandatory. Mandatory buyback of your gas stove. Mandatory buyback of your gun is a confiscation of your weapon. That's the government confiscating it and then giving you money as the Constitution requires, although, in my opinion, the Constitution does not give the government the ability to confiscate it in the first place under the Takings Clause of the Fifth Amendment of the United States Constitution. But these people don't care about the Constitution. They don't care. They're not interested in that. It stands in their way, the Constitution. It stands in their way. All right, 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. What was that, Matt? What'd you say?
Oh, the gun clip. I actually think that was the first line she delivered since becoming the nominee that was actually funny and not totally weird.
Really?
Yeah.
It sounded so awkward to me.
No, look, I'm not going to disagree with you. That line was canned. There's no doubt about it. But she has such a difficult time delivering even canned lines that I found that one, I thought it was her best.
Interesting. So because all the, it's like.
The bar's so low.
You're the tallest. I can't
say. Don't say it. We'll get canceled. We know what you're referencing.
You're the tallest of the. I'm trying. I'm on YouTube using my hands to show someone You're taller than Peter Dinklage. Okay, if there's a Peter Dinklage competition, you're the tallest Peter Dinklage. Is that fair? Is that a good way to put it?
Well, I would phrase it this way.
Go ahead.
The bar is very low.
Right.
And she managed to clear it on that one instance. That was the most charming part of the entire interview. If you don't want to watch like 40 minutes of Oprah Winfrey and Kamala Harris, and you just want to find the most charming part, we just played it. There's nothing better than that.
That was it, the whole thing.
That's as good as it's going to get.
How long was the whole interview?
I think it was like 40 minutes, maybe an hour.
And that was that one, like 18 seconds of her being that. And you agree it was canned, just delivered better than all the other canned lines.
That was the high point, yeah.
It's like of all the canned food in the bunker, this Spam is delicious. This is the best can of Spam ever. Of all the canned food, I got Chef Boyardee here. Oh, baby, I'm eating good tonight. It's like that.
That was like the SpaghettiOs with the meatballs, basically. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right, listen, when it comes to your home, protection and peace of mind are paramount. That's why Emmons Roofing and Siding is your go-to contractor for roofing, siding, and windows. Your home will not only look stunning from the curb, but will also be energy efficient, secure, and ready to withstand the elements. With Emmons, you know you're getting top quality materials and the finest craftsmanship in the area. So, what are you waiting for? Reach out to them today. It's beautiful work that they do, and because Stephanie and Matt are my friends, and they know that times are tough for many people, they're offering each and every one of my listeners an inflation relief discount of 10% off roofing, siding, and Anderson window replacement. Don't wait. Call Emmons today at 856-885-6677. 856-885-6677. Or check out their website at emmonsroofing.com. Upgrade your home with confidence today with the people that I've trusted in my home for over 10 years. In two different homes. Our old home and the home we live in now. That's Emmons Roofing and Siding. They serve Pennsylvania, New Jersey, Delaware, and the Jersey Shore. And listen, winter's coming, so now's the time to start thinking about it. If you need that roof to be replaced or if you need roof repairs, remember, 10% off inflation relief discount for my listeners, emmonsroofing.com.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
My favorite guest of the week, she is the vice president of the Davis Institute Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation, former Deputy National Security Advisor to President Donald Trump, an energy expert, a Phillies fan. She's Dr. Victoria Coates, and the crowd goes wild. Hello, Dr. Coates. How are you? Uh-oh. Big introduction, and now I hear nothing.
I was muted.
Uh-oh. But you're there now.
Yes, I am. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Dr. Coates. Great to have you with us today. By the way, they're reopening Three Mile Island. What do you think of that, huh?
I actually asked somebody the other day if that was possible, having grown up 23.6 miles from it and fled from the incident in the 70s because we were small. And so my father, who was a great defender of nuclear power, stayed at our house, and my mother took her two small children to Boston. But he was never going to leave and sort of cave to the nuclear alarmists. And so fortunately it didn't turn out to be much, but you know, that's been a real loss to the Pennsylvania grid since it's been shut down. And I think starting to reactivate some of these nuclear plants is a fantastic idea.
I agree. I think it's wonderful. And it also shows too how the technology has progressed and how we can fix these things. Something that Trump and Elon Musk were alluding to too in their X Spaces chat about a month or so ago. And Microsoft's going to tap power from Three Mile Island. I don't know if you know any of the details of that. I haven't read about it yet, but I saw the headline and I thought, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's very similar to what happened with I think it's Amazon in Susquehanna County, where they essentially have taken over a local nuclear plant to power a data processing center. And I think we're going to see more and more of this. And certainly when small modular nuclear reactors come online. Now, I've been promised one of those for 10 years and it has yet to materialize, but I am now being promised that it will be in the next 18 months. But those are a very logical thing to park next to these just very energy hungry processing centers that are going to start cropping up all over the place. And, you know, this is a great solution. The one note of caution I would sound, and I think this is something we need to communicate both to Harrisburg and Washington, is, you know, we are reliant on Russia for a lot of the services and fuel that go into nuclear reactors, because we have things like that national park Biden declared out in Arizona is in a perfectly good mining area, which has now been taken off the table for what you need to fuel these nuclear plants. And so we need to be much more self-sufficient here at home and not back ourselves into a position where we're relying on Russia, of all things, for our fuel and services.
Yeah, I don't think people realize that. I mean, that's remarkable that we are so reliant on them. I mean, the fact that we're relying on foreign countries for anything is scary. I know J.D. Vance was talking about that the other day, saying that most of the ibuprofen comes from China, antibiotics come from China. But for the what we need for nuclear reactors, that comes from Russia. And why does the United States put itself in a position like that to be so vulnerable if one of these countries decides we're shutting off a supply line here?
Well, it's really been a 30-year bipartisan mistake. So sort of a slow rolling train wreck. I think the decision was originally made under the George H.W. Bush administration that China was our friend. Mm-hmm. And we could domesticate China, and it was very logical to make things cheaply there, and the economic liberalization would bring them around to our way of thinking. Now, that was very powerful reasoning after the fall of the Berlin Wall. It seemed like that had just happened in Russia and that they were coming around. People were talking about putting Russia in NATO at that point. And remember, Vladimir Putin visited George Bush's ranch in 2001, and Bush looked into his eyes and said he saw his soul. And so that's where we were. And all of this seemed good and logical, and that we should then cooperate with them on the International Space Station and things like that. And unfortunately, it's turned into an unmitigated disaster. So, you know, the decoupling is very challenging with both. And so we're going to run next year some kind of tabletop exercises you take ibuprofen. We don't want to get our pharmaceuticals from China. Okay, how do we extract that without winding up with a catastrophic baby formula shortage kind of a thing? Because these unintended consequences, if you don't approach this strategically, can happen. So we're going to try to do some of that work.
Dr. Victoria Coates is with me. It's great to have her. Let's talk about what's going on in the Middle East. I got a page from somebody that there were some things going on. I'm sorry, that's too soon.
I hope not. I hope you didn't.
I am definitely going back to analog and not digital. All right, that's, you know, clearly. What's happening over there?
Well, it's crazy, and just before Matt called, I was looking at a post by the Israeli Defense Forces who gave an account of the strike they did on Beirut today, and it explains a lot. They said that Hezbollah and their elite Radin unit were plotting another October 7th attack, either on or around the anniversary, but in the north, and that this was, they had named it Operation Conquer Galilee. Remember the Sea of Galilee, the biblical sites are all up there. And they were going to do the same thing, same playbook, infiltrate Jewish communities and Druze communities and kill and rape and destroy and loot. And that the IDF had uncovered that. And that explains then the events of the last really 5 days now, the extremely sophisticated attack on, as you said, pagers, and then other transmitting devices, radios, even solar panels that were all found to be laced with explosives that could be detonated. And, you know, then these additional strikes to really decapitate Hezbollah. And if I were Hassan Nasrallah, I would not be sleeping very well tonight. The key guy they took out today is a guy named Abraham Akil, who, like his predecessor, Shukr, who was eliminated two months ago, he was part of the 1983 Beirut Marine Barracks bombing, one of the largest terrorist attacks on Americans and one of the greatest losses of life that we've had. So So he absolutely deserved to meet justice, and so we send our thanks to the IDF for that assist.
Wow.
And at the same time, thank heavens that that this plot was apprehended and that they had the means to disrupt it.
I have. It's funny you mentioned that. Jack Carr is coming on at 5:35 today. He's got his new book out about the bombing of our military base in Beirut. So I'm. It's a perfect time to have that conversation. I didn't realize the connection there. So thank you for pointing that out.
No, from my sort of personal touch on that is the person who was called by then Secretary of State George Shultz the day after the bombing was to become Middle East envoy and try to manage the situation with my old boss, Don Rumsfeld. Mm-hmm. And so his account of that, that period, both the bombing itself and then the weeks afterwards, that is from his book, Known and Unknown. That is all coming straight from his personal experiences traveling around the region, trying to make the situation better.
So when we think about what's happening right now, the administration is saying, and John Kirby said he believed the U.S. still believes a diplomatic solution for the fighting on the Israel-Lebanon border is possible. He stressed that a war between Israel and Lebanon isn't inevitable, and we're working to prevent it. How are they working to prevent it, Dr. Victoria Coates?
Well, they're doing some rather extraordinary things. I mean, and poor John Kirby, I mean, at this point, he sounds like Baghdad Bob. Yeah. No, there is no diplomatic solution with Hezbollah, not if they were planning another one of these attacks and had gotten to this degree of their plot. And, how can you say that we can come to some kind of arrangement with these people? And what they did is they dispatched their long-suffering energy envoy, Amos Hochstein, to the region 10 days ago, and Amos apparently, from what they leaked to the press, delivered the hard message to Netanyahu and the cabinet of Israel that really the United States did not support an escalation in the north. Meanwhile, at least the Israelis knew what was going on, and we should have known too and been extremely supportive, because how many Americans would have been killed in this Operation Conquer Galilee? I mean, we should have been right there saying, yes, let's disrupt this. Let's destroy these people. They're coming for both of us. But instead, they continue to insist that, negotiations are possible, that there's some other non-military solution. I'm sorry, for some people, there is just a military solution. And that is your option. And either you take it or you surrender. And in this case, I think the Israelis have made their course pretty clear.
I think that the problem right now is that we're talking about trying to minimize civilian casualties, and the Israeli government, I think, has done a remarkable job of doing so. But this is urban warfare, and I don't think people really understand that point. I guess they don't understand that point. But, when Netanyahu came and addressed Congress, and Kamala Harris wasn't there, she was at a sorority party, but he kept reemphasizing that point. But this is an urban conflict, is it not?
Well, it is. And, Lebanon is a small, densely populated country with, among other things, hundreds of thousands of refugees from various local hotspots, Syria, for example. So it's an extremely complicated environment. And I think, in a way, what Israel did, particularly with the pagers, which are in the hands and the pockets of the terrorists.
Yeah.
There's no reason you have one of those pagers if you're not a Hezbollah member. And so, they were very clearly and as surgically as possible targeting Hezbollah. And there were a couple of unintended casualties, but really not a lot given the scale of that operation. So I think, I think they deserve great credit for their ingenuity in directly targeting the enemy. And the one other thing about Lebanon that's important to understand is Hezbollah is extremely powerful, but it is not all of Lebanon. Lebanon, that they represent Shiite Islam. Lebanon, there are also Sunni, there are also Christians. And a lot of the Sunni and Christian Lebanese have been celebrating this, refusing to give blood. They don't like Hezbollah. Mm-hmm. And so they also self-identify. So as you're going through the population, not everybody's perfect, obviously, but the vast majority of the problem are the Shiite. Right. So you can identify them.
And in that sense, where you, it says Hezbollah began firing across the border shortly after the Hamas-led October 7th attacks on southern Israel that left 1,200 dead and sparked the war in the Gaza Strip. That we're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of that. It's hard to believe, but they still have hostages. I mean, we're still dealing with hostages. We don't even know exactly if they're alive. We don't have a status on that. I mean, that's kind of gotten out of the news cycle, but it's an important part of the story that I don't think people should forget.
Absolutely not. And the key thing here, you know, these poor people, they think 100 and change are still being held. And we know now, under the most gruesome of conditions, the six who were shot at the beginning of this month, including Hirsch Goldberg Poland, the American citizen, you know, they had been starved, kept in a cave, you know, given water bottles to drink and then used as a toilet. I mean, this is not in any way compliant with the Geneva Convention. And, you know, these poor people, it's been almost a year. And, you know, the fact that the president of the United States or the Democratic candidate for the presidency is not, you know, coming out every day and saying, if you do not give them back, you know, you are going to be turned to glass. And that's what really troubled me about Hirsch's murder. I mean, many things troubled me, but we had a third of the U.S. Navy in the region at that time. We had two aircraft carrier groups and all sorts of other assets, and we didn't fire a single shot in retaliation for that, for the just summary execution of a tortured American. We did nothing. And they know that's going to be the U.S. response. Now, they also look like they've got a real bad Israel problem on their hands. So, you know, hopefully the Israelis will be able to get this resolved and get anyone who's still alive out. But that would happen a whole lot faster if the United States wasn't promising them statehood and promising them some kind of ceasefire. No, you know, they don't get anything. They might get to live if they give everyone back. But that should be the deal.
Switching domestically to the United States, obviously domestically, I want to talk about the border, but not the southern border, the Canadian border, because the Wall Street Journal has a story today or yesterday. Ottawa's decision to tighten immigration policies has created a surge of crossing into New York, New Hampshire, and Vermont. I mean, up there, you can basically just walk over the border. But they have Canada is actually now cracking down on illegal immigration. I mean, it seems like the United States of America is the only country left in the world that isn't.
Yeah, no, this has been a strong concern and something. You know, at Heritage, our border and immigration security group that are in my Davis Institute, they have been really sounding the alarm on this, that it is very easy to fly into Canada, that Canada now has its own bad illegal immigration problem, which is why they're doing this, and that one, if anything is easier than the southern border, it is the northern border. And that we are being infiltrated from this angle as well. And of course, Secretary Mayorkas, the Vice President, the President, say nothing about this, are doing nothing about it. And you know, we're just adding to all of the illegal migrants who are flooding into the sanctuary cities of New England.
This is amazing. Well, at least they're sanctuary cities, so they can enjoy lobster and oyster. We're almost in oyster season, so at least you know they'll get some of that. All right, before I let you go, what the hell happened last night?
You know, this is always so hard this time of year, and I think we have to remember the agony of the last couple of years and scraping into that last playoff slot at the 25th hour, literally, and how tense those Septembers were. So I think we should be in much better shape tonight. And I'm very hopeful that this is our clincher game, and some of our guys are a little banged up, and they can maybe get some rest before the playoffs, and we can let the Mets and the Atlanta fans have the nail biting moments this month.
Okay, I hope you're right. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. You're a good luck charm. You going to the game?
No, I'm actually still in D.C. The president spoke at the Israel-America Council today, and I'm actually speaking tomorrow. So that President Trump, rather. So I have to be here in D.C.
Very nice.
I will be rooting them in.
Send President Trump our regards, Dr. Victoria Coates. We appreciate your time, as always, my friend, and we will talk to you next week. Have a great weekend.
Sounds great. You too.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, as we continue along the show, the top story of the hour brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Venaria, VenariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. VanariaDental.com, VenariaDental.com, with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Dr. Mike is your man, and he will give you the smile of your dreams. You'll be so happy that you reached out to him. So do it today, VenariaDental.com. Yeah, like I mentioned, Jack Carr is going to join us in the 5 o'clock hour, so I'm very, very excited for that. And we'll come right back. I got more to say. We're going to talk about what the Secret Service director said today. Turns out that there are differences between liberal brains and conservative brains. Who knew? And I'm also going to let you know that the new iPhone 16 is out, but it lets you do something in space. I'll tell you all about that as well, as Elon Musk is slamming the FAA for regulatory overreach because they're targeting Elon Musk simply because of his politics. We'll be right back.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.